Welcome to the Gottesdienst crowd, where we foster confessional integrity, liturgical preservation, and preaching that doesn't stink. We believe that the historic liturgy of the divine service is more than mere cobwebs of antiquity, but it is a true treasure of the church to be dusted off and brought down from her attic to be enjoyed. So let's get dusting. Lutherans elect first openly transgender bishop, Megan Rohrer. Megan Rohrer has been elected as the first openly transgender bishop within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. They will lead some 200 congregations in California and Nevada. NPR, May 16th, 2021. Cambridge Dictionary changes definition of man and woman. The new definition? An adult who lives and identifies as male, though they may have been said to have a different sex at birth. December 13th, 2022. Lawmakers eyeing bill to mandate race-based anti-white reading. The reading list will dominate the curriculum, says Representative Mary Flowers. From the Prairie State Wire Report, January 20th, 2023. Black pastor excoriates white people in the wake of Tyre Nichols' death. They, quote, gonna bring you down, end quote. Quote, the gospel is justification by faith and social justice, Pastor James Galliard said. Fox News, February 4th, 2023. Charting a course to make maths truly universal. Mathematicians leading decolonization efforts say that building knowledge-sharing partnerships with communities is key. It's from Nature, January 30th, 2023. Professor lambasts white people as, quote, damaging, who need to dismantle their whiteness. The Oregon professor said, how can we who are white show up as more effective and less damaging participants? Fox News, February 4th, 2023. Non-binary teacher boasts on changing students' genders without parents knowing. Quote, they need protection, end quote. My job, which is a public service, is to protect kids. Sometimes they need protection from their own parents, Olivia Garrison said. Fox News, January 25th, 2023. And finally, Disney slammed for anti-white propaganda in new The Proud Family reboot. Disney show argues that America owes black Americans because the country still has not atoned for its systemic prejudice, racism, and white supremacy. Fox News, February 6, 2023. So welcome back to the Gottesdienst crowd. This is Jason Broughton. What I just read are a series of headlines from over the past couple years. This is the context into which the publication of the new Luther's Large Catechism with annotations and contemporary applications has been published and distributed now. And as we know from all of the arguments surrounding that particular release, context matters. And we have back with us David Ramirez, the pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Union Grove, Wisconsin. Welcome back, Ramirez.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to look at how the Missouri Synod, and particularly the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Matthew Harrison, responded, and what was his response? What did he say after he pulled the publication or delayed the publication?
Well, after President Harrison had, given the publication or distribution rather a pause, then he sent out another letter or email saying how distribution of the Large Catechism would resume. And I'm not going to read the whole text of it. I believe you're going to put a link or the text under the show notes. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Great. So I don't want to read the whole thing. I just want to kind of summarize it and then go back and talk about some of the statements in the letter. In terms of the summary of the letter, President Harrison, you know, acknowledges that he requested Concordia Publishing House, CPH, the Missouri Synod's publishing house, to pause distribution of this work, this book. And of course, that's exactly what had happened the week before this letter came out. And then he said, I've asked CPH to resume distribution according to the bylaws of the Synod. And frankly, I'm not a bylaw expert, but it sounds that he is acknowledging that he didn't have the authority to pause a book that was already approved in this fashion. And so, frankly, even though obviously I'm not a big fan of the work, in at least some of the parts of the work, but at the same time, if that's what the bylaws say, then that binds his hands, and that's what needs to happen. So in terms of that information that he conveyed, I think fair is fair. I paused it. Now I found out I didn't have the authority to do it, so I unpaused it. I encouraged them to resume distribution. Okay, fair enough. Also, he added another piece of information, which I thought was very good, was that if anyone has concerns or affirmations, he says, concerns about any of the content of the book, he states under what bylaw the process for challenging the book, where that can be found. So in terms of all that information, I think that's very right and salutary. But I think that there's a couple other things in this letter that I either don't understand fully, or would critique, frankly. Mm-hmm. At the very end of the letter, he says this. He says, "I deplore the unchristian attacks on the servants of the church who edited and contributed to the production of the volume, including the editors, our faithful members of the CTCR, CPH, and more. At the same time, we invite thoughtful critique and criticism, which will be given due consideration moving forward." One perhaps minor point, but I know it's stirred up a little bit of controversy, is, you know, he uses that word deplore. I mean, in and of itself, that's a fine word if that's what he means, which I assume he does. But many people have pointed out this is rather Hillary-esque, so to speak, to talk about deplore or deplorables. I don't know if that was probably the right word to use. Probably poured more fuel on the fire. But again, that might just be a nit that I'm picking. But more to the point, I'm going to say that I understand his desire and his sense of duty to defend the reputations of his colleagues, especially as he names, or not names, but mentions the members of the CTCR. That's our Commission on Theology and Church Relations, for those who don't know that acronym. CPH, as we've said, is Concordia Publishing House. And then he says, and more, and also include the editors. And I got to say, I understand that instinct. It's a good instinct to want to uphold people's reputations and their good names. I do not believe that at least some of the folks who were part of this project are above criticism. But he does qualify it by saying, "I deplore the unchristian attacks." So if he is only talking about unchristian attacks, well, none of us should treat each other not like Christians. So, okay, I get that. However, there's a lot more offense than just the offense that the members of the CTCR, CPH, and the editors have experienced or suffered under. So again, I get wanting to defend your colleagues. I think that's a laudable instinct and a duty that we are to do. And to say, let's be Christians about discussion and debate, fine and good. And I am glad that he said we invite thoughtful critique and criticism, and that's going to be given due consideration. But I'd like to just leave it there, because I want to get back around to how whose offense matters a little bit later, if that's okay.
No, I think that's good. I mean, Yeah, because I definitely would like to talk about that in terms of whose offense matters. And, you know, even to the extent of what his point is by, you know, saying thoughtful critique. And I mean, it makes it almost sound like he hasn't received any.
I can't read his mind, but I do agree with the tone being very one-sided. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that there has been a lot of thoughtful critique, serious critique and criticism. And I'll just leave it at that because
we'll get back to it.
Sure. But going back up to the first paragraph, if folks are following along, in the second sentence, and I'll just read it, he says, "I made this request, this request to make the pause." He says, "out of an abundance of caution, as an online disturbance was taking place over some brief quotations from the contemporary applications essays in the book." Now, the statement is not false, but I think it's inadequate and frankly simplistic, overly simplistic. Now, again, I think that Harrison's instinct to be cautious was good, and we commended him for it the last time we spoke, and I still think that his move was a good move. However, he references caution because, or as, an online disturbance was taking place. This was not just an online disturbance. And I don't think that really fairly paints the picture. Again, I don't want to replay everything that we talked about the last time. I would encourage people to go back and listen to our longer podcast about the book and the problems with it. Mm-hmm. But I know for a fact, that this was not just a Twitter rage out. I mean, there is an aspect of it there, even though I think some of the critiques on Twitter, frankly, were rather thoughtful and were serious criticisms. They weren't just ripping things out of context. However, to call it an online disturbance, that's not what it became. Many, many dozens, if not hundreds, I would say probably hundreds of pastors and certainly hundreds of laymen were very deeply disturbed by this. And so to kind of describe it as an online disturbance is just not sufficient. It's not an accurate representation. Mm-hmm. And then he says this was taking place over some brief quotations from these essays. Again, I know that the people who were critiquing it that I talked to were not just critiquing brief quotations out of context or even, you know, with lack of context, but rather they had bought the online version. They were reading the whole essay. And remember, I think it should be noted, these essays are not long. You know, these aren't like 20, 30 page essays. They're very brief, just a handful of pages, most of them. And these critiques were not just over brief quotations. Also, there were criticisms about authorship that is not recognized in this statement. And I don't think that that's fair, frankly. We talked about, and we were certainly not alone, we talked about the issue of authorship in terms of female authors and also non-Missouri Synod authors, especially centering in on ELCA pastor/theologian Stephen Paulson. Those are serious critiques that have nothing to do with quotations. I mean, I said that I hadn't even read his because the issue was not what he wrote, but rather who he was and in what document he was writing. So again, I'm not saying, hey, it's not fair because we did a podcast a couple weeks ago and we brought it up. No, I mean, everyone was buzzing about this. I was literally at a circuit visitors retreat when all this was happening. It was not just about brief quotations. People had lots of different critiques, and it was not just an online disturbance. So I don't think that's a fair summary of the situation. The other big problem that I find in this letter is the next sentence, and then a sentence later, and I'll just read it if that's okay. I have had time. This is Harrison again. I have had time to reevaluate the controverted sentences, and found that while some things might have been expressed more clearly, nevertheless, there is nothing in the content of the volume promoting critical race theory, confusion of sexuality issues, or any theological position at odds with biblical and confessional Lutheranism. And then later he says, frankly, I think each reader will be astounded at the content and quality of the volume. Well, there's a lot of people who have read significant chunks of it, and they have not been astounded. And I'm not just saying just a couple cranky people. Lots of serious, deep concern has been expressed. And again, I know dozens and dozens and more dozens and dozens of people have told me that they've written in about this and had already written it. And it wasn't just about these buzzwords. I think that's a big problem, some of the buzzwords used, and we talked about that before. But I guess I don't get why, if there has been such concern, not just online, not to diminish the online concern, but all over the place, of many pastors, many officials even, many laymen, I don't see how President Harrison, with all due respect, could do a serious reevaluation of all of those concerns. I don't think any man could in that amount of time, frankly. I don't think that you could. And so I don't understand why this, you know, this portion of the letter is such a ringing endorsement when there are so many people mm-hmm. with serious detailed criticisms. And again, many people have a concern because terminology is used, buzzwords are used, examples are used, and so the framework is a problem too, not just what the authors intend, but the, as I know you spoke about last time, kind of a frame of the world or a framework of the world. And also, I know this is a side point, but, well, actually, I don't think it's a side point. When he admits that some things might have been expressed more clearly. Well, I mean, right there, if you admit that some things could have been expressed more clearly, then maybe it needs to be revised, frankly.
They're astounded by the poorness of the quality, not just the goodness of it.
Some are.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no. I mean, again, I really wish people on both sides of this would actually talk more about the issues. Because I read this and I don't see a reflection of what the concerns are. I don't see a reflection of what people are not just feeling or sensing, because even those things are actually important too, but also what they've been saying. And if there is something connected to the large catechism in the same volume that will be used to probably train pastors, be on every pastor's bookshelf, and thus shaping their teaching and preaching all throughout the Missouri Synod, well, maybe we should not have a bunch of essays in there where even some things might have been expressed more clearly. Maybe those essays should be in a different book. Maybe those essays mm-hmm. should be revised. I accept that President Harrison can't put it on pause because it has already been approved. But again, I don't understand the statement that he's reevaluated and that he can state this with such affirmation, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So now that we're talking about kind of not just the letter, but you brought up the context. I really think that, you know, I'd like to put one note down or say one thing about the very end of the letter, because Pastor Harrison or President Harrison quotes Jude, very short book of the mm-hmm. Bible, and he quotes Jude 24:25. It's a very good quote. There's nothing wrong with the quote at all, but I find it a little ironic that Jude, in large part, is about being aware and being concerned about false teaching and false teachers. I'd like to read a couple verses on this.
Yes, please do.
Jude, verse 3. So this is Jude writing, "Beloved, although I was very eager to write to you about our common salvation, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints." Very famous line, calling upon Christians to contend for the faith, to wage war against, falsehood and their own temptations. Verse 4, he goes on, "For certain people have crept in unnoticed, who long ago were designated for this condemnation, ungodly people who pervert the grace of our God into sensuality and deny our only Master and Lord Jesus Christ." I mean, I the moment I saw that quote, certain people have crept in. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the main critiques we've talked about, where wittingly or unwittingly, again, I want to be fair, there are, as I know you've talked about, worldly frameworks, worldly terminology, that have crept in. So again, I don't want to say everyone who I'm criticizing is a false teacher, even though Stephen Paulson most certainly is, and he's crept his way into this book. And so I think that applies. But false teaching is I think wittingly or unwittingly, worldly things are creeping in. And if I could just quote one more, from verse 17, "But you must remember, beloved, the predictions of the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ. They said to you, in the last time there will be scoffers, following their own ungodly passions. It is these who cause divisions, worldly people, devoid of the Spirit." And we need to be self-reflective and critique ourselves when we fall into either habits or actions that are worldly, that are sinful. When we start taking on the framework or the assumptions of the world, we all need to be on guard about this. And that's one of the main points of Jude, the book of Jude, and Jude's advice is beware of this stuff. The devil doesn't just walk up with, a red outfit and horns and say, "Hey, you want to go sin?" I mean, he's sneaky. And so we should be on guard. We should not be content with a lack of clarity next to our large catechism.
Well, and frankly, I kind of take it all as coming from the same cut from the same piece of cloth in terms of taking on the framework of the world. I mean, to include a teacher like Paulson, where their church body has, in terms of Lutheranism, is the most worldly church body that we know of, it seems as though the inclusion of this kind of language, the failure to define these things in a biblical way, in order to contrast that with the worldly way of using that language, seems to fit quite nicely with including a teacher like Stephen Paulson from the ELCA. When you have Lutherans elect first openly transgender bishop in the headlines from 2 years ago, it seems to me that this is the trajectory. And I know that's my concern in terms of, are we just heading down that same road with this same kind of inclusion of language?
Yeah, I agree. And I know that there's some folks out there, perhaps even well-meaning folks, who would say, "Oh, guys, come on, stop hyperventilating, stop being overdramatic." And yet, I think that you reading all those headlines just really brings to bear the point of that context does matter, and bad company corrupts good morals. And that doesn't mean we can never learn from someone outside of our confession. That doesn't mean, we have to reject a translation of some ancient work just because the person isn't belonging to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I mean, let's not do straw men. Let's actually debate and discuss like reasonable men. As Paul says, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. And I think it is very reasonable and very biblical and very true that the context, specifically with the ELCA, is that they have done so many abhorrent things again and again and again. We don't need to list them. Everybody knows. And we, parish pastors and our people, all the time have to say, no, we're not those Lutherans, like that NPR thing that you quoted. I mean, you're laughing because you know how many times you have to do it. I have to do it. My my parishioners have to do it. I mean, this is just something that we in the Missouri Synod, living in America, that's our context. Constantly, when there's a headline of first tranny bishop, you know, I mean, hey, what's going on among the Lutherans? Which is a great book, by the way. But, you know, first tranny bishop, you guys are okay with that? No, wrong synod. We're not those Lutherans. We're these Lutherans. And so why would we have someone who is still in their communion writing? That makes it more confused. It's a lack of situational awareness. It's a lack of understanding the context.
So why does it seem as though Harrison's response doesn't take that context into consideration? Why does he seem so tone deaf?
I don't know. I mean, I want to be really clear about what I think. I mean, if you're going to diagnose a problem, you got to really, you got to be humble about what you do know and what you don't know. And you also have to be fair. And I think that President Harrison has shown over his presidency and even before that he's not a liberal Lutheran. I'm not saying that. I don't believe that he promotes CRT or any part of the homosexual or transgenderism agenda. I don't think he wants to go the woke route. In fact, I was at a South Wisconsin district convention where he was giving the essay, and it was a great essay, and he was really hitting hard on the woke stuff. And he took one of Kendi's books, he threw it on the floor, you know, to show, I mean, the obvious implication, he didn't say these words, but this is a load of, you know, I mean, this is not who we are, and we have to stop this. I mean, I do think that the Synod has been slow to respond to the mission drift and to the woke stuff infiltrating the Concordias. But Harrison did react to that with CUW. Again, I know many people would critique him about how fast the response was. And I agree to a large extent, but he has responded. So there's an analogy that I want to draw. If woke ideology is a fire and it has, you know, it's raging through a city, you know, I think that Harrison recognizes that it's a fire and that it's bad. I think that he's even sent some fire engines to go deal with it. But I think if we're going to really drill down to what I have apprehension about and concern, great concern about, and admittedly some frustration, I don't think he understands the severity of the problem. And this is not a fire that is a small fire. It's huge and it's raging. And even though only some of it has crept under into our neck of the woods, now I'm confusing my analogy, but anyway, even if our neighborhood isn't totally on fire yet in Christendom, it's a problem that I guess that is my critique on how this sounds. Is that I don't think he understands how big, how bad the problem is, and how swiftly and decisively it needs to be dealt with, like yesterday.
Yeah.
So I think that would be my biggest critique on kind of the broader scale about not understanding the context. And I don't know why. I mean, I'm not in President Harrison's head. I don't want to speak for him. But what does, like I said, I'm a little frustrated as well, is more than a little. But my frustration comes from the members of my congregation and the congregations around me, the pastors that I know, and not just pastors who are on the quote-unquote right side of the synod, you know, right versus left, but tons of people recognize this, even if there's disagreement about worship, even if there's disagreement about other things. We don't need to get into what those, you know, vectors are, but the fact is that most people understand this is one of the great challenges of our day. And I don't understand why, you know how like the generations tease each other. I you know, we've talked about this before. I mean, the classic.
You mean that you're a millennial?
Oh man, you were waiting to call me that. Oh, I guess I walked right into that trap. Man, that hurts. I might have to quit this interview. I don't know if I can handle it. I'm going to go cry.
Well, if I'm the old guy, you're the millennial.
You're only 8 years older than me. It's not that big.
Not eight.
I know. All right, millennial. What is it? What is it for?
Yeah, I think five. I'm 45.
No, we're 4 years apart. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think that, you know, the older generations, especially right now, they look on the younger generations and, you know, what are kind of the slurs, you know, or teasings, whatever, you know, snowflakes, not hardworking, you know, entitled, all that kind of stuff. And then the younger generations, especially boomers and millennials, get into this stuff. And you know, what do the millennials say about the boomers? Well, they're all out of touch and they don't understand what's going on. And yet,
yeah,
the folks that I know, and I think this describes 85% of the people who are in a Missouri Synod church on any given Sunday, they've been through the Great Awakening. You know, they've seen SJWs run wild over the last 10 years. They've seen the massive, you know, propaganda and improper use of authority by the government all during Ronatide, all during the coronavirus stuff. And also during that, they saw all the riots in 2020. I mean, yes, I think that millennials have long said, you know, the boomers are out of touch. But I tell you what, when it comes to this, the boomers that I know, they do understand this. Maybe they don't understand it because they didn't grow up with it like the younger generations. But I think 85 to 90% of the people who are in worship on any given Sunday in the Missouri Synod, they know how serious this danger is. I mean, they know that their kids or their grandkids are having this stuff jammed down their throats. They know the buzzwords. They know what they're suffering at work. You know, here's another year and here's another, you know, DIE or diversity training this or whatnot, pride flag being run up. I mean, they're very sensitive to this, and I think rightfully sensitive to this. And I guess if they understand and if they react so clearly on this terminology and buzzwords, or what in the world? Well, maybe not instinctively, but they're reflexively concerned about this, and I would say rightfully so. Why isn't our president having that same reaction? And I don't know, but I think
that's a good question.
Yeah,
it's a good question, and it is concerning because, as you've already mentioned, he was so good during the district conventions this past year on this topic, this very, very topic. And to see, it's almost just dismissive of the concerns, like not even taking the concerns seriously, just kind of patting us on the head and say, you go, you don't get it. You just go sit down. And that is concerning to me because it seems like a different man than what I heard in the conventions.
Well, and that's why I really want to, you know, drill down to the, I think, proper diagnosis. And that is, it's not that he's unaware. It's not that he doesn't see these things as threats, but I don't think he is sensitive enough and cautious enough or reactive enough strongly against this terminology and seeing how this stuff is just wittingly or unwittingly, the camel's got more than a nose under the tent. And you have to be aggressive and clear and beat the world to the punch on this stuff. I mean, what I do fear is, and we talked a little bit about some of the parallels with the battle for the Bible last time, and, you know, who knows where the future will lead us, but I mean, I have to think about the parallel of the bad bowl conferences back right after World War II. You know, Europe is in shambles. The Missouri Synod is, you know, helping out with giving aid and whatnot to Lutherans in Germany. And there were these very, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but there were these conferences, the bad bowl conferences, where so much bad poison of German theological ideas again, I'm trying to not get into the weeds. So let's just call it German liberalism in the Lutheran and other churches over in Germany at the time. You know, it has been described by many people that our guys go over to these conferences and they're just razzled and dazzled by all these, you know, folks with great academic degrees and, you know, learning and all this kind of stuff. And some of these guys were pretty impressive. I don't totally blame them for being impressed. But that was kind of an inflection point, as they say, of when a lot of people, you know, a lot of poison got brought back into the Missouri Synod. I mean, Hermann Sasse warned the Synod about this, and that's a whole long story. But again, why not be extra cautious on who you hang out with and what terms you use and what ideas from the world that you're incorporating? You got to be very, very discerning. And again, we can't be not on our guard. We have to be on our guard about this. I mean, here's a question I wanted to ask you, because I know some folks are, you know, kind of doing the too clever by half thing of, well, we need to be concerned about this too. This isn't the only issue. Well, of course it's not the only issue, but you tell me what church body in America has fallen prey to crazy, I don't know, what the left would call right-wing extremism, you know? What church body? I mean, I could wait here all day. I know that the answer is going to be the same. None. None of them have. How many church bodies have gone woke? I'll name five. ELCA, UMC, you know, well, the Unitarians were always woke. I mean, not Unitarians, but the UCC, the Episcopalians, you know, the Southern Baptists are pretty much conquered. I don't know if you have any to add.
There are some Presbyterians, but I don't remember which acronym it was, right?
PCUSA.
Yeah. So is it just that we want to be considered relevant, not seen as dinosaurs, be invited to the cool kids table? Is that what's driving some of this?
I don't know. I mean, It depends on who's the we. I mean, the Synod as a whole, or are you talking about President Harrison or the authors? I don't know. All I know is one thing. This stuff, you know, just it cannot stand and it can't be just let go, or else we will lose our Synod. I'm not hyperventilating. I'm not being overly dramatic. That's just the reality. You let this poison in and it will worm its way further, you know. Or as Jude says, don't let false teachers creep in. And by extension, don't let false teaching creep in, wittingly or unwittingly. How many times do people fall into bad stuff because they unwittingly take on bad stuff? Because it's just the air they breathe. I mean, so yes, I'm incredibly disappointed and frustrated that this letter, I believe, betrays a lack of concern and a lack of understanding about how poisonous this woke stuff is.
Yeah. Well, it almost seems as though it, and maybe I'm putting words into his mouth, and I don't mean to be, I'm just trying to ask a question. It almost seems as though he's more worried about giving them offense than us.
Well, yeah, I really think that's okay, so if you want to go there, that's where I really do feel for people. Literally, I feel that people are rightfully upset and they're offended by these terms in this book, and there's no recognition in this letter of that. I mean, whose offense matters? And again, I can't read his mind. I don't know what he's thinking. Maybe he would affirm this, but I'm sorry to say there are so many hundreds, if not thousands, of good, faithful Missouri Synod folks that are, I mean, certainly thousands at this point. They read these words and maybe they don't have a very in-depth theological training or understanding, but you know what? When they see the word gentrification, they know that this is a buzzword for the left. When they see white uncapitalized and black capitalized, that's more than a minor point. When they see these buzzwords again and again and again and again, they hey, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, guess what? It might be a duck. Yeah, it's a duck, right? You know?
Well, it could be a platypus, Ramirez.
Well, sure. Oh, yeah, that's right. Right. Yeah. Well, actually, right? You know? Well, but even if all the Mr. Well actuallys are right, and that's not what authors are trying to push, right? Mm-hmm. What about the offense that it causes? You know? Yeah. Again, context matters, and it matters for people in the pews who, like I said, are getting this crud rammed down their throat everywhere. They've got to worry about their children being groomed. They've got to be worried about what they say at work, or else they'll get fired on trumped up nonsense charges. I mean, All the churches are under assault by this stuff, and it's ridiculous for anyone to be dismissive about those concerns. And whether that's intended or not, that's how it comes off in this letter. And so that's the thing that gets me hot. I mean, I don't like President Harrison praising this book. I think that's the deeper theological matter and concern. But what gets me hot is, what about all the faithful people, not just lay people either, but just clergy, like we said too, we're not those Lutherans, you know, and lay people telling their friends, like, that's not us. Well, hey, In your large catechism book, it certainly kind of sounds like it. I can't tell you how many people, especially after all of the Corona stuff and during it and during all the riots and during all of this great awakening that we're still living in, they've said to me, Pastor, I love coming to church, once a week here, because I know I get to be with people who share my faith, and now again, I'm putting words in their mouth, but I know exactly what they mean because I've talked to them for hours and hours and hours about this stuff in Bible study and over coffee or whatnot. It's tiresome. Mm-hmm. It's enraging to see your country get destroyed. Your communities have this poison seep into it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry.
It's destroyed families.
Yeah, it's destroyed families. Yeah. And so then they get this. Intentional or not, it doesn't matter. It's a slap in the face. It's a slap in the face. I mean, we've talked about some potential actual errors, and you know, and we've talked about authorship, but I want to focus in on the offense and whose offense matters. You know, if some people have been unchristianly maligned who are part of this project, I do feel for them. You know, I don't think it's wrong to call people to, be Christ-like in their criticisms. But you know what? What about the people who are deeply and rightfully offended that a bunch of buzzwords are in here? Then ELCA guy, a guy who's in communion with transgender bishops who support drag queens in the service. Mm-hmm. I mean, their offense is justified and right. I mean, it is. It's disgusting and it's offensive, and it should not stand. And I hope that our leaders, not just President Harrison, but our district presidents, our, you know, circuit visitors, our lay people, everybody recognizes this for what it is and does something about it, and write letters and say, President Harrison or pastor or district president, this is offensive. This doesn't follow the sound pattern of words. Why is there an ELCA pastor writing next to the large catechism? This is not okay, to say the very least. And they're rightfully offended. I'm offended. And I don't think it's, oh, my feelings are hurt. It's wrong. And it totally betrays a lack of situational awareness and what our people are facing day in and day out.
I don't think I could say it better myself. Perhaps I'll just end with sort of kind of how I ended last time, which is, well, to whom much has been given, much shall be required. Much has been given to the leaders of our church body. Much has been given to our church body by our forefathers in the faith. The question is, will we live up to them? Or will we live up to our name? Or will we, like so many other church bodies in this world, let the enemy in and trample us and the treasures of the church underfoot? So thanks for your time, Ramirez.
Yeah. Yeah. Could I make one more suggestion if that's okay?
Yeah.
I think also that, you know, as laudable as it is that President Harrison and others who want to defend people that they see, that they shake their hands, you know, they shake hands maybe daily or once a week or whatever, that they're thinking about their reputations and their names. Good, fine, fair enough. But I would pray that our leaders and would also consider, you know, the real people, the real flesh and blood people who do suffer because of mistakes like this, to put it mildly. And I pray that they will understand the dire situation that you very eloquently laid out.
Well, thank you for your kudos there, and also for your time. We'll catch back up with you, hopefully, on a cheerier topic.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks.